Good morning again. Can you hear me? Let's see. Let me try this one. All right, good morning. My name is Peter Goldstein. I'm the CTO and co-founder of Provision Networks. Today's agenda is about VDI, the possibilities of VDI, the role of RDP in the VDI game, and of course what we've done at Provision Networks for VDI. First of all, a little bit about the company. We were founded in 2004, but by no means are we a startup. We were spun off from a leading terminal services systems integration firm. We've been developing a comprehensive framework for Windows terminal services that delivers core and extended features, including application publishing, load balancing, seamless windows, web interface, SSL gateway, universal print driver, USB PDA redirection, and a few other things. What we've been doing lately is leveraging all this extensive knowledge in the terminal services arena to ensure the success of the virtual desktop infrastructure. So what is VDI? It's always interesting to trace back the roots of a good idea. And story has it that it wasn't born in VMware's labs. It was actually born in your own labs. Somebody had the bright idea of hosting Windows XP on a VMware ESX server and providing access to it over the RDP protocol. From there on, the rest is history. So VDI is really an emerging desktop management paradigm. It's a server-based computing, or a form of server-based computing, and a remote access solution. Given the right technologies, you can extend the virtual infrastructure to give VDI a remote access face. And the promises of VDI are, of course, desktop manageability or increased levels of desktop manageability and security. Needless to say, it, of course, leverages the VMware virtual infrastructure. We've got to say that as well. So one of the greatest things about VDI, I think, is the fact that it turns the desktop into a service. The operating system, the desktop operating system, and its applications are encapsulated inside virtual machines, which are merely files that can move throughout or across the entire virtual infrastructure. The operating system is no longer tied to the hardware, and therefore, you no longer have to really worry about PC hardware refreshes every 3 years, so on and so forth. Other benefits of VDI are in the way of security and adherence to regulatory compliance requirements. Many companies today are decentralizing and outsourcing their business functions, shipping their data offshore, and therefore, it would be very, very hard and difficult to comply with guidelines and adhere to these compliance requirements. HIPAA, Sarbanes-Oxley, so on and so forth, how could you really ensure the privacy of personal health information or ensuring, high levels of trust in accounting and reporting practices when the data isn't really under your control? So VDI, just like in the server-based computing world and terminal services, allows you to keep your data and the applications that drive the data inside your corporate walls. So you can't help but compare VDI to terminal services. In fact, when the idea came to light, everybody rushed to comparing it to terminal server. And again, I'm sure a lot of you are doing the same. So I've made my living over the last 10 years from terminal service. I think it's the greatest platform in the world. There isn't a day that goes by that I don't think, eat, and breathe terminal service in one way, shape, or form. So VDI, in my opinion, is a form of server-based computing similar to terminal server. But there are some differences in the fact, one of them being that VDI promotes the use of standard desktop operating systems. What you're hosting inside these VMs are standard operating systems, Windows XP, Vista when it comes out, so on and so forth. And from my experience, having done hundreds of implementations in the terminal services world, most of the challenges encountered in terminal server environments have nothing to do with terminal server. They have to do with the fact that applications are not written, a lot of applications, not all of them. Okay? I would say legacy applications, let's coin them like legacy applications. They're not written to standard, and that's where the problems start to surface. For example, you had the issue with limited access user. An application was written on the assumption that the user has administrative privileges to their local machine. If you don't give them admin privileges on the terminal server, it'll be very difficult to tune that application and make it work on the terminal server. The other issue that I've encountered is the single user-minded software development methodology. A lot of developers build their applications with the assumption that one user equals one computer. And therefore, they may write user preferences and settings to HK local machine. They don't have access to HK local machine. What happens? The application will fail to run. There are many ways to mitigate these situations. There are tools that are not well advertised for one reason or another. For example, in some cases you can use a tool such as the Microsoft Application Compatibility Administrator. How many of you know about this tool? Not a lot. Here we go. And I've heard from many customers that on the terminal server, they've had to repackage the applications. They have to dismantle these applications and use repackaging tools to package them in such a way that they would install on the terminal server. The other thing that I've encountered myself, as well as my customers, is the fact that many ISVs, when called upon for support, are reluctant to extend software support if you're running the app on your terminal server. Again, none of these issues have to do with terminal server. So what does VDI promise? It promises total isolation. For example, if a user's VM crashes, it's running that user's own Windows XP instance. All the other VMs remain unaffected. If the prints folder crashes due to a bad driver, all the other VMs remain unaffected. If anything bad happens inside the VM of one particular user, the other ones continue to run completely unaffected. Additional benefits, as I said before, given the right technologies, you can give VDI a remote access face. You can preserve some very well-known terminology such as application publishing, web interface, SSL gateway, seamless windows, all the things that you've accustomed to or you're accustomed to in a terminal server environment can be preserved in a VDI environment. In fact, there's absolutely no reason why VDI cannot coexist side by side with terminal services. And my recommendation is to deploy as many apps to terminal server. And when you do encounter issues with terminal server due to some applications not adhering to standard practices, go ahead and deploy them on VDI. But again, if you do like VDI and you want to go all the way, fine. Just deploy everything you got on VDI. I'm sure there are other folks that would rather implement everything on terminal services. In this case, you don't have any problems such as those I'm describing here. Therefore, terminal service would be the ideal platform. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about what we've done over the last few months in the way of VDI. Again, I've said that we've leveraged our experience in the terminal services arena to deliver a broker-based system for VDI, given VDI a server-based computing and remote access face. So, as far as we're concerned, a provision infrastructure is a collection of terminal services and virtual machines. You want to go all the way terminal services? Great. You want to go all the way desktop infrastructure? Great. It's up to you to tip the scale one way or the other, or turn the knob in favor of one technology or the other. In fact, when you log into our system, what you're getting is an application set, some of which are hosted on terminal server, the others on hosted Windows XP or Vista desktops. Applications can be published individually, or you can publish full-blown desktops, as you see in that last icon, on either platform. I'd like to run a quick movie to give you an idea of what I'm talking about here. Let's see if it plays. Here we go. Just a minute. So what I'm doing here is I'm going to log on to the web interface, authenticate, and get back my list of applications. I've launched an application. It's running on Windows XP and I'm launching it seamlessly. Okay, you have absolutely no idea that it came from a Windows XP machine except for the Gina that you saw during the logon. On the terminal server, you see the terminal server Gina. Launch additional applications, great. One thing I'm not showing here is launching a full-blown desktop, but you can imagine exactly what I'm talking about. All right. I'll switch back to my presentation and dig a little deeper into the Virtual Access Suite. From a management standpoint, it's a broker-based desktop management platform that is tightly integrated with the virtual infrastructure. From a user standpoint, it's a set of user experience features delivering a remote access-like and user experience, and we have also enhanced it with some last-mile features such as Universal Print Driver, which we've had for 6 years, and USB redirection, USB PDA redirection, which we've had for about 2 years now. Those are technologies that we've had for the longest time in the terminal services arena, so they haven't been recently developed. All we have to do is adapt them to Windows XP. Let's dig a little deeper into the broker architecture. First of all, it's a highly scalable XML-based Windows service. It integrates tightly with the virtual center management server to perform a variety of VM management tasks, whether it be powering up machines, powering them off, resuming them, suspending them, resetting them, the things that you could do with the virtual infrastructure client, you could do from inside our management console as well, because we're talking to the virtual SDK. You're allowed as many virtual centers per infrastructure as you'd like. So given that a virtual center is capable of handling, say, 1,000 or 2,000 virtual machines, we'll give you the ability to import or to connect from our management console to as many virtual centers as you want and create what we call super groups of virtual machines. A group of virtual machines is one that is managed as a single entity. Multiple VMs are grouped together and managed as a single group, a single entity. A supergroup is a group of groups that spans across multiple virtual centers for scalability reasons. And you're allowed as many brokers in the infrastructure as you wish. So there isn't a limit as to how many brokers you can have, because those brokers are going to have to interact with the virtual center management server to perform these tasks I've been telling you about. On the other hand, they have to also respond to client connectivity requests either directly over SSL to the client or indirectly through the web interface. And one of the important things is that we have an XML interface. It's an open XML interface allowing any third-party vendor to communicate with that broker. That's all we have to give anyone, like a thin client vendor, for example. Once we give them the XML interface, they can use their own RDP client or any other RDP client, it doesn't matter, to communicate with a broker, authenticate the user, receive back a list of virtual machine groups that the user is entitled to access, and then once the user says, connect me to virtual machine group one, the broker allocates one VM in that group for that user, assigns it to them on a permanent or temporary basis, sends down the address of that VM, allowing the RDP client, whoever RDP client that is, to generate an RDP file with the address of that VM that they want to connect to, or the address of the SSL gateway through which they need to connect to that VM. I'd like to talk a little bit about the VM group management tasks. As I've mentioned, a VM group is a group of VMs that are managed together as a single entity. So given a 500 VM group, if I assign this VM group or I authorize it for a group, domain group, Windows domain group, then users of that group are allowed to access that VM group. So once they say, connect me to this application called Visual Studio 2005, the first thing that the broker does is determines which VM group Visual Studio is published on. And then it looks into the policies. Again, I'm going to talk about policies as well. The system is policy driven. Looks at the policy and says, is this VM group enabled to for permanent usage or temporary usage? In other words, if I allocate a VM to a user, should it be allocated on a temporary basis, or should that VM become that user's VM forever and ever? And I'll talk about more policy settings in a second. One of the most important group management tasks that you would perform is probably creating virtual machine groups. So there's a wizard-based process for creating these groups. Some of the parameters that you prompted to supply are VM naming convention. What would you like to call these 500 VMs that you're about to create? XPVM 001 through 500. Number of VMs in the group would be something like 500. Number of VMs to create at once. I'm going to create 500, but I want to do them 10 at a time so that I wouldn't bog down my SAN. Target VM resource pool. That's important as well. We're not targeting specific servers in the virtual infrastructure. We're targeting resource pools allowing the underlying virtual infrastructure to distribute those VMs the way these pools are designed from a resource allocation standpoint. The other thing is sysprep customization parameters. I would like to join my VMs to Windows domains. So therefore, I'll pass me all the parameters necessary to join to a domain. By the time the machines are up and running, they're ready to be logged on to. And of course, the date and time to start the VM creation process. You may want to start it on a weekend or at night. It's up to you. Other tasks include deleting VMs, suspending and resuming VMs, powering on and off VMs, as well as reporting on the status of VMs, which ones are powered off, on, suspended, how much resource utilization these VMs are incurring. Now, as far as VM session status reporting is concerned, who's logged on to a particular VM? What time did they log on? And from what client device are they logged on? Client device means the name and the IP address of that device. And at any given moment, give me the process names or the applications being run or active inside that particular VM. Let's talk a little bit about VM group policies. As I've mentioned earlier, VM groups are policy driven. You establish policy settings on VM groups that dictate how these VMs should react to log on, log off events, so on and so forth. So the first one is temporary versus permanent, or persistent versus non-persistent. Once the user logs on, should I allocate a VM for that user on a permanent or temporary basis? Once the user logs off, should I put it back in the pool, or should it become that user's VM forever and ever? Once the user logs on, should I give him additional privileges? Should I make him administrators of that machine? And that's done dynamically, by the way. So the user logs on, we decide this is the machine that the user should go to. We'll add them dynamically to the local administrators or the power users group. And they're automatically added to the remote desktop users group so that they could be allowed to RDP into the virtual machine. Additional policies include the ability to take a snapshot and revert to that snapshot in the event that the VM is rendered inoperable for any reason. If I'm a power user, I'm a software developer, and I'd like to have full control over my VM, including downloading stuff and installing them inside that VM. If I break that VM, I'd like to be able to revert to a snapshot. So I have to, first of all, take a snapshot knowing that, hey, I'm about to do something that could mess up that VM. So in the event that I do mess it up, I can revert back to the original image. Worst case scenario, you would provision a brand new quote-unquote file that encapsulates an entire operating system and the development tools needed by that developer. Now, here's an interesting one that we've worked hard on, and that is, what happens when the user logs off? Should we keep that VM up and running or should we suspend it or shut down the operating system? And we've been very successful at doing either. Well, the most popular one, of course, is suspending the VM. What happens is the user logs off. We get a log off event. We're running some tools, by the way, inside the VMs that communicate on an ongoing basis with the broker. It's important to do that. For the broker to know at all times what's happening inside the VM, and for the VM itself to communicate with the broker. So once we get an event that a user is logging off, what the broker will do is, once that log off event has been completed, the VM will be suspended, therefore conserving resources. The next time the user logs on, we know the VM is suspended. What we do is we send a command to the virtual center to resume the VM and send feedback to the client, asking them to wait 5 seconds. So you'll see a screen blinking saying, wait, the VM is being powered on, or if the machine is completely powered off, not even suspended, it gets powered on and it gives you even feedback that the operating system is booting. And by the time the RDP listener, the terminal service is up and running and ready to accept connections, the user is sent a signal to go ahead and establish the connection. Additional group policies include expiration. By the way, when I say group policies, VM group policies, not VM group policies. Difference, okay? I don't want to confuse them with Active Directory group policies. When a VM expires, what happens? Let's say that I provision a group of VMs for a particular contracting group, and I want them to work on a project for 60 days. What happens at the end of the 60 days? If I let those VMs up and running, somebody could inadvertently reconnect to them, maliciously or otherwise. So what do I do? I can suspend them, I can power them off, I can delete them completely automatically. There's also the ability to specify access time timeline or timetable. So access hours by day and hour. So you're only allowed to access the system on those particular days and during those hours. Now that I've talked about VM group policies, you can override the VM group policy on a per VM basis. So if I create a VM group of 500 VMs, but I have a couple of VMs in there that have to have a different policy, maybe one of them belongs to me and I want to have different policy than the rest of the user community, I can override the group policy and establish a VM-specific set of policy settings. Virtual channel policies. Those are also established on a VM group. If a user logs on to this VM group, should I auto-create their drives, their printers, their handhelds? Should I allow audio to be played on the client? So on and so forth. So it's not an all or nothing. You determine whether these should be turned on or off on a VM group basis. And as I mentioned earlier, the system, the way you give users access to the system is by way of application publishing. You see, when we have all successfully virtualized our servers, we went P2V, we've been widely successful at it. Who hasn't been? Great. So from a user experience standpoint, virtualizing the servers have not affected the user experience at all. With the virtual desktop infrastructure, the desktop infrastructure extends all the way to the local device, unlike virtualizing servers. Virtualizing the desktop means that you have to take into consideration how you're going to allow the user access that desktop. One of the models is application publishing or desktop publishing. The other way is the XML interface that I told you about, which can be leveraged by third-party RDP clients, thin client manufacturers. They can use the XML to authenticate the user, receive back a list of VM groups that the user has access to, and then launch a full-blown desktop to that VM that the broker tells you to connect to. But as far as our solution is concerned, meaning if you install our own clients on Win32 client devices, laptops, or even Windows CE, you get the concept of application publishing. And therefore, you publish desktops and applications in the same manner that you do on terminal server, except that you publish them on VM groups. Okay? notice the similarity between terminal servers and VM groups. And the other thing that is important is fault management. What happens if a user's virtual machine is rendered inoperable for whatever reason? What happens then is the broker is smart enough to give the user access to a temporary VM from the same VM group. And once his original or her original VM becomes available, the user is redirected to that original VM on subsequent logons. Needless to say, we're leveraging the underlying virtual infrastructure, VMware's resiliency, recoverability, fault tolerance, everything that's happening underneath is not duplicated. It's left completely alone. Client connectivity. This is our own flavor of the Microsoft Remote Desktop Connection. Instead of connecting to a particular server, you're dropping down the box and connecting to a particular published application, which could be a desktop. Once you connect to, say, a published desktop, the first point of contact is with a broker who authenticates you and then determines which VM you should be redirected to run that particular desktop or application. As far as client device support is concerned, we have a 32-bit client for Windows, all the way from Windows 9X to XP, and soon Vista. There's a Windows CE client that we've started to embed on some select thin client manufacturers' devices. A Java client will be available in Q1 of 2007, and so is a Linux-based Pixie client. We're also toying with the idea of using Windows PE as a way to boot up a device. But I think the one of the most important features is that open XML interface. I keep stressing that because it allows anyone who's got an RDP client, whether it be the embedded Windows CE, Microsoft-supplied RDP client, or someone's own custom-developed RDP client, to leverage the XML interface to launch a VM session. Again, I go back to the user experience. Here's our 32-bit client. We call it the App Portal client. You authenticate, you get back from the broker a list of published applications or published desktops. Okay? There's also a web interface, which I've done the demo on. There's also the ability to push the applications all the way to the client desktop. So you run App Portal, which I showed you at first, in what we call desktop integrated mode. It runs in the system tray, authenticates the user, and pushes the application to the user's desktop. I'd like to again emphasize the fact that these apps, you don't know at this point whether they're published on terminal server or Windows XP hosted machines. We've blurred the line completely so that the user experience never changes. Here's a summary of the user experience and last mile features that we currently offer. There's a lot more coming. In a nutshell, published desktops and apps, seamless Windows, 4096 by 2048 resolution, multi-monitor support only in seamless Windows mode currently. We're still working on how to do multi-monitor support on multiple monitors and not have an application open on all four monitors when you maximize it, or the taskbar spanning across the scenes of multiple monitors. Those are good challenges. It's exciting. Additional things include PDA redirection, very time-honored technology. I don't think there's anyone else who does it for BlackBerries, Palms, and Pocket PCs. We've built a virtual USB hub controller allowing you to plug your Palm, BlackBerry, or Pocket PC into a client device, Win32 currently, and seamlessly synchronize across an RDP or redirect that device if you have the software, whether it be ActiveSync, HotSync, or BlackBerry Desktop Manager, that software on the VM or inside on the terminal server seamlessly sees the desktop, the device plugged into your client machine. Web interface, SSL connectivity, and remote password reset in the event that you have a domain policy that requires that you reset your password before you log in. I'd like to show you some screenshots. Here are some screenshots of the wizard that walks you through creating a a virtual machine group. First thing you do is you supply a name for the virtual machine group. You specify the resource pool on which you want to create the VMs. So resource pool 3 in this case, create me 500 VMs on it, and let the virtual infrastructure distribute those 500 VMs across the underlying ESX servers. And choose a template. Template management also becomes an important thing in a VDI environment. You build a Windows XP or Vista template. You install the apps that you want to install inside of it. You install our own provision tools that we call the provision tools for the virtual desktop. You perfect that VM the way you want your 500 users to have that VM in terms of applications installed and so on and so forth. I'm going to talk about other possibilities as well in a second. So once you choose the policy to base your VM creation on, you move on to the next screen, which is sysprep customization. Windows registration, 500 VMs. I'm going to run XP on 500 VMs. Please supply me with a text file containing 500 unique product keys. Okay? Not going to let you cheat there. And join a domain. Specify the domain name and the domain administrator that's got permissions to join the domain. Naming conventions for the VMs. How would you like to name the VMs? DevStation 001 through DevStation 500. You can even import the names of the VMs from a text file, ASCII file as well. And once you click Next, you specify the number of VMs that you want to create. If you say do nothing, all the settings that you've supplied can be used on later on. You can say tomorrow create me 500 VMs, and all the settings that you've used will be or all the settings that you've supplied will be used to create those VMs. Here are the names of the VM, the wizard has created the names. You can at this point actually override settings on a per VM basis. So if you pick DevStation 05, you decide, hey, I want to call it Peter 005. You can do that. And then at this very moment, you can also have the option to customize the VM group policy or the policy for each VM. You don't have to do it right now. You can do it at any given time after the fact. Here's a snapshot of our management console. What you're seeing here are all the VMs. Two of them have already been powered on, and they're ready, actually, to be connected to. The third one is in the process of being created. And I think in this particular case, I chose to have Virtual Center create the VMs one at a time. Otherwise, you would have seen multiple green bars across the screen. Now I'd like to talk about a little touchy subject, and that is RDP. I've always been a fan of RDP. But you know what? I reckon that a user experience delivery solution is as good as the network it's on. Somebody said that in the past, something along those lines, when they're talking about Verizon cell phone network. Who was that? Okay. To be honest with you, there's absolutely nothing wrong with RDP, except that no one has really focused on exploiting and extending it. So I'd like to reference this particular work by Jason Nee. It's called On the Performance of Wide Area Thin Client Computing, in which the author of this paper compares various presentation layer protocols, including ICA, RDP, AIP, VNC, Sunray, and X. Now, this is a few years old. However, not too many things have changed. If you look at ICA and RDP, they're both low-level graphics protocols. You can't play 3D OpenGL on them, but I know for a fact that Citrix is pushing ahead with that, and that's what we plan on doing as well. Both protocols are server push type protocols. What does that mean? It means that the video driver on terminal server or XP sends or pushes screen updates to the client on a periodic basis. So they're both the same. Deep inside. They both use RLE for compression. So why hasn't anyone really leveraged it or extended it to deliver a modernized user experience? I don't know. But this is what I refer to by graphic partitioning. allowing RDP to perform more graphic operations locally on the client. In other words, let me intercept the types of traffic, the content of interest on the server or the VM, rather than go through the video driver, intercept it, redirect it via virtual channel to the client and play it over there, such as multimedia. You know, the thing about the video driver on terminal server is that you have this buffer that gets filled up with screen updates, and if you don't send these screen updates fast enough to the client, the ones outstanding in the buffer get overwritten, such as playing a multimedia presentation or something, or any dynamic content. So that's why the video quality goes down drastically. So the idea here is to intercept that kind of traffic, open your own virtual channel, compress it, play it in the media player on the client side. Okay? RDP allows you to open, as far as I remember, 32,000 virtual channels. You know, where there are maybe 6, 7, 8, maybe 10 in total currently used. So there's still about 30,000 plus that we can leverage for any reason, for any purpose, for innovating on top of RDP. The other thing is the mitigation of unfavorable network conditions. RDP does generally well in latent environments. I've connected over RDP to our Reston, Virginia farm from Spain, from London, and got very good experience. In fact, last night from my hotel, the quality of service in my room was 13%. Okay? I mean, it was, the connection was almost unusable. But I was able to get my work done over RDP. The experience wasn't very favorable. Nevertheless, I was able to do whatever I wanted to do. How did I measure the quality of service? Just went out and got a tool called MySpeed PC from VisualWare and ran it to measure the network conditions. I'm sure there are plenty of tools out there as well. So what do we look to do from a future standpoint? We'd like to build an RDP latency reducer. We'd like to build content acceleration, bidirectional audio, Twain support, which we're in the midst of doing, as well as respond to, actively respond to customer enhancement requests. Whatever you guys think we should do on top of the platform, we're open to doing it. In that, I'd like to open the session for questions. That was my presentation. I'm ready to take any questions that you might have.
Yeah,
that's what Twain is about, and yeah. Okay. That's quite a bit of work to do there. The thing about USB is that once you plug in a device into a USB port, that USB becomes what the device wants it to become, unless serial. Having said that, we have something going on in the... To be honest with you, right now our USB PDA redirection supports a few other things than just PDAs. We just don't advertise it yet. However, we have a good idea now on how we're going to support legacy USB devices and what we need to do for them. Having said that, you also need to look at what the Longhorn and the Vista support for USB devices or PNP plug-and-play devices or what Microsoft will be offering in the way of plug-and-play device support. Okay, Microsoft is actively doing something in that respect as well. However, if I'm not mistaken, drivers have to be written in such a way that this would be supported. So anything moving forward, anybody who's got a device, want to write a device driver for it that can be redirected via the plug-and-play redirection channel in Longhorn and I think Vista too, I'm not sure, will work fine. There are a couple of technologies of interest out in the floor today. By the way, our booth is 612. We are exhibiting and showcasing the product. A couple of technologies that I think are very complementary. One is DataCore. They have SAN management technology, which I think is cool because You know, when you're creating VMs and you're allocating, you don't want to allocate 8 gigs of disk for each VM. So what the virtual volumes do is allow you to create these 8 gig partitions, but they don't allocate the white space ahead of time. They just allocate disk as the VM requires, or as storage requirements increase inside the VM. The other one that I think is a very cool technology for that complements virtual desktop infrastructure is Ardence. Okay, definitely stop by their booth. They have OS streaming technology that allow you to provision virtual machines in minutes as opposed to, say, hours. Okay, you can customize virtual machine images and stream them down over Pixie to blank virtual machines that you would create. You don't have to create full-blown templates with the application that you need to install inside of them. You manage the images on the Ardence side. Any other questions? Who are the players? Which product of Citrix is? They have it in the terminal server world. We do as well. We have, our solution is comprehensive. Not only do we support terminal server, we support hosting Windows XP and Vista workstations as well. So yes, they are a competitor, of course. Competition is good. That's what this country is based on. Let me take this one and I'll go over there. Yeah, the brokering is like DNS. It hands off the address that you need to connect to. The question was, are you doing RDP handoff? Is the broker in the equation when you establish a connection, I think? And the answer is no. It's just like a resolver. It tells you who to connect to. And when you connect, you're either connecting via the SSL gateway indirectly or you're establishing an RDP connection directly with that VM, depending on whether you're coming in from inside the network or maybe outside the network. That's where the SSL option becomes a viable option. Citrix is RDP, the broker, the RDP connection broker. I have not seen it. But as far as I know and heard, it gives you the ability to publish the RDP client in a Citrix presentation server environment. You launch the RDP client as a published application from which you connect RDP over ICA to the virtual machine that's been assigned to you. That is a really cool technology, a really great question. In fact, we've discussed it, Mark and I, Mark Milers with VMware, and that was something that he suggested as a future enhancement, the ability to take your VM with you. Okay? So that would be like a version 2 or version 3 type of product or feature. Take this one and this one. No, because at any given time, the web interface or even the client itself, if you're not going through the web interface, know about the availability of multiple brokers. Okay? So when the user makes a connection with a broker, one of the things that he gets is a list of all brokers in the farm. So the next time that broker goes down, another broker is contacted. In fact, we do randomization. At any given moment, you pick a random broker from the list to ensure that the load is spread equally across all the brokers. If that broker doesn't respond, we pick another one and connect the user to. I think there was a question.
So based on my last question, how would you protect your VM from being accessed directly and bypassing the connection
protocol? That's a very good question. How do you prevent users from RDPing directly? Machine is up and running, it's got an IP address. How do you prevent users, other users even, not the one who owns that machine, from connecting to it? We have a service running inside the VM that we call the data collector. What the data collector ensures is that no one is in the remote desktop users group at any given time, so you cannot log on to the VM. There'll be an additional enhancement in the future, not even allowing you to establish the first RDP point of contact with the VM. It just throws you out. Okay, but at this given moment, you're not allowed to in unless you're specifically given authorization permissions to access. The current version is 5.6. It's an EMF-based driver. It supports all the features of the original driver, so we query the client-side driver to learn about its capabilities, just like a universal remote control that you program a manufacturer-specific remote control into it. So that's exactly what we do. We support pretty much all the features that the client-side printer supports. Some printers, however, have things called private features, things implemented on a proprietary basis. We have a way also, we have a feature that allows you to invoke that feature set and apply it on the client side when the print job is streamed down to the client. Okay. Absolutely nothing that you don't have if you didn't have VDI. Virtual center. That's all we need. Okay? The connection broker can either be installed on a physical machine or multiple virtual appliances. We install inside the virtual appliance all the things that the broker needs to communicate with the virtual center management server. But there's absolutely nothing that you need above and beyond that. That's the beauty of it. It's all seamless. An ESX box goes down, the machine is vMotioned or migrated to another one. That's the neat thing about VMware, is that you're not looking at boxes anymore. You're just looking at resource pools, okay, and let everything happens under the hood. You don't want to worry about that, and that we take advantage of that. We don't touch it. We don't even need to know that it exists, provided you have a SAN, of course.
So you're doing a lot of good stuff with provisioning on the back end. What about provisioning on the front end? Have you looked at that? We're looking at solutions like Tetrix with HP and stuff like that. We see VMware as a really critical space, especially in the developer community, giving people virtualized desktops and giving them the ability to create virtualized desktops on the fly. Let's say I want to create a lab environment on the fly. Give me a tool to actually provision those devices so that I get an email back saying, here's how you connect up to them or whatever it might be.
That's a good idea. I'd like to entertain that. Can we talk a little bit more about it? Maybe stop by our booth. Maybe we can sketch it on a napkin.
Yeah, the other question I had is, do you actually support, we talked about different devices, but we're looking at, do you think that WISE SpinOS is a really good operating environment for a thin client?
Right.
Is there support for
WISE? Yeah. All we have to do, WISE willing, is get our XML interface. Okay? It's a very simple XML interface. It creates messages intended for the broker. You pass it the username and password. You get back an XML message containing a list of VMs that user has permission to access. And we return back an IP address or an SSL gateway address for the built-in RDP client in that S10, right, you said? S10, is that the model? To generate a standard RDP file which they can launch using the embedded RDP client. So the neat thing about that XML interface is that I don't have to worry about building my own RDP client for the S10 or for an Xbox or for, you know what I'm saying? So anybody who's got an RDP client can leverage that XML interface to communicate with the broker and thus connect to a virtual machine. Keep your hand.
For support staff, is there any way that they can find and share a published application?
Find and share a published application.
Yeah, so they continue working with the user right now. We've got it set up so that the user calls in to complain about the problem.
Remote controlling. I'm glad you said that because I didn't put that in my presentation, even though I was fine-tuning it all night. We use remote assistance to allow the user or the administrator to initiate a remote control session to that user in the system. Simply put. So remote assistance. I may not be able to actually show you this in the version that we got here on the floor, but I know it's in there, in the released product. I'm going to take this question. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Because one of the use cases is migration, you know, migration to Vista. Turn off the PC or use that as a launch pad to a virtual Vista session running in a virtual infrastructure. 100%. No. No. Not at this point. To what over ICA? To a terminal server?
Well, no, so if you have those public apps, you
right.
Have RDP to host a desktop, you only have a public app to web interface.
Yes. Yeah. We even put our own client on the Citrix presentation servers and do RDP over ICA using our own sophisticated broker. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, if you have a Citrix published desktop, you can use our app portal desktop integrated mode to push the RDP application to the Citrix desktop. Sure. Any other questions? It's licensed on a per VM basis. As far as I know, yes. That may be subject to change, I'm not sure, but currently it's on a per VM basis. I think it's $50 per user. All right.
You know, we can go ahead and help control licensing and all those VMs. Talk about spending up $500.
You know, one of the technologies is application virtualization. Microsoft has recently acquired Softricity, which is the absolute best application virtualization on the planet. Think about the benefits of not only virtualizing operating systems and encapsulating them inside virtual machines, but being able to stream down or push via SMS these applications, these sequence applications, to these virtual machines. So on one hand, you don't have to have static templates, okay? You just have blank, pristine operating system machines or virtual machines, and then leverage Softricity, or which just again got acquired by Microsoft, and SMS to deliver these applications in that manner. So, you know, OS virtualization doesn't necessarily just exist at the hardware level. You're not just supplying hardware to a virtual operating system. You're also delivering a virtual operating environment to an application. So, so you can virtualize them at multiple levels. Any questions? That's it. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Which one?
Protocol comparison.
Oh, you want to know where it is? Oh, yeah. Where did I have it? No. Oh. I absolutely would love to give it to anyone who wants it. We've met before, right? We've met before. Probably at our booth, at a different show. All right, here it is. You want the name of the paper? Yeah. Yeah, I have. Maybe that's when we met at a different show.
Yeah.